I'm Robert Lendrum.
And my name is Jamie Roberts.
And this is the Running Scared podcast,
where we review the movies that had you running away but coming back for more.
And we're coming back for another one today, Jamie. Something interesting. You threw another weird one at me, man. And again, I came in cold and you gave me this fucking gore fest of a film we're going to review today called The Sadness.
Rob, I figure it was, you know, summertime, hot, sticky, a lot of humidity. Yeah. I was going to Vegas.
We're going to be up 500 by midnight.
Yeah! Vegas!
Yeah. Vegas, baby, Vegas!
Oh, yeah.
Wet. I figured this would be the perfect. I figured this would be the perfect film. Actually, I was taking a look at some of the new films that were out, some of the new horror films that were out across all the streaming platforms. And that's interesting. Normally, you'd look to the theaters, but now, you know, when you have all these streaming content providers, there's really lots to choose from.
Oh, and shit goes fast now, eh? Like, it's in the theater.
Exactly.
3 months later, it's in streaming.
Exactly. You know, actually, I wanted to watch Top Gun, and it's already out. But anyways, I digress. So I took a look, and The Sadness looked like it was something interesting. So we put together that poll up on Twitter, and then The Sadness was, it came out on top. And actually, I got a message from at Bloody Bits, and she was like, you got to do this one. And I'm like, all right, let's do it. It's one anyways, but the fact that somebody just shouted out and wanted us to take a look at it, definitely a different kind of film from what we're used to reviewing. But before we get into that, Rob, I'm just going to take this time right now. Shameless self-promotion.
Promo!
Promo! Okay, let's get anybody out there that listens to this, just give us a review. 5 stars are fantastic. We'll take 4, but 5 is good. Whatever you could provide, you know, just give a couple minutes out of your day. Give us a couple of reviews so we can kind of get that humming along. And follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter handle is at RunningScaredPD. And the Instagram handle is at RunningScaredPod.
Yeah, so we're pretty active on Twitter. Jamie's definitely trying to step up Instagram a bit. Also, Jamie, you know what we could do? I've seen other podcasts do this. It's pretty clever. Is they do things like, you know, pop a question and into your review. So give us 5 stars plus a question and we'll actually, you know, field it on the pod. So I don't know. We could try, maybe we could do our own spin on that instead of just ripping it off. But we'll think of something.
All right. So listen, I think we should probably just jump into, because there's lots to talk about with this film. Let's just jump into the one-line challenge.
I think you're first this time, aren't you? Or is it me? Who did Blade for you?
I'm going to go first on this one. Yeah. One-line challenge, okay?
Yeah. Ready? I'll count you in. 3, 2, 1.
A young couple thrown to the grips of a vile, repugnant disease that affects a country, and their reunification process against a backdrop of bloodthirsty, sex-craved perverts. The Sadness. I think it was like two. I think I it was like two parts.
I thought it was pretty good, frankly. I mean,
okay,
you got
good,
most
good
of it out. I think.
Yeah, I got most of it out. Yeah. I was like, okay. Okay, Rob, you're in. 3, 2, 1.
A horror gore exploitation retelling of Romeo and Juliet goes wrong when an avian flu infection drives the whole country wild with sex craze violence. The Sadness.
That's not bad. That's not bad.
Do you buy my Romeo and Juliet retelling here?
I'm just trying to think. There's a macro tragedy. I'm just not sure there was. And that's an self-inflicted tragedy. But I think you could probably, you know, there was another movie that I was actually looking at, and it was, Oedipus was referenced. I think it was Mother, and Darren Aronofsky's films. So I think you can find, if you look hard enough, you can find a little bit of Shakespeare and everything.
Well, it's a Taiwanese film, but it is a Canadian.
Okay, this is the Great White North, okay, on the map. Now, here is a different color because it's like USA. And up there, same color as Alaska, because that's like Hawaii.
Not just director, not just writer, editor of the film as well. This guy, Rob, what's his
name? Dude, he got a special effects credit, too.
Are you kidding me? Rob Jabaz. This guy has 3 major credits in this film. And I wouldn't doubt if he's in the background somewhere in one of these. Like, I bet he stars in it somewhere. We'd have to pick him out, but I bet he's in there somewhere.
He might be one of the homicidal sex perverts.
Yeah.
And those are his own words in terms of when he was asked the question, you know, what's the plot? And essentially it is a zombie apocalypse, a virus that turns people into homicidal sex perverts. An interview I watched, he had lived there for 13 years. And I guess he had been in the industry, and I think this is his first film. Definitely an interesting cat. Rob, is there anything you want to kind of mention just off the top?
Well, yeah, I mean, just that this is definitely in the genre of the exploitation film genre of like horror. It was loved at a bunch of the film festivals. I know like other companies were seeking to be the distributor on this one, but you know, the issue I would think a lot of people would have with this film is like that violence and the sexual violence in this film would really make it hard for a lot of platforms to carry. And I think it makes perfect sense that Shudder decided to pick it up because, you know, that you know what you're getting when you subscribe for Shudder, right? You know, you put the password on that once your kids don't like go surfing for movies
it's
in
true,
there.
Yeah.
Right. Like my 5-year-old has already figured out how the Apple TV works. So like I'm not going to let him wander into Shudder too often.
Yeah.
Point being, yeah, this is a pretty nasty, ugly, brutal, gorish with sexual violence film. Like it's difficult to take, and I think something you and I had said off pod. It's not totally it's not part of our taste. Like you and I both have articulated earlier in earlier pods that you know we don't love the Saw movies. We thought those kind of like gore fest, torture porn kind of movies, but this one definitely is interesting in different ways than those, and I think it deserves more critical discussion.
Yeah, he made a point of talking about some of his influences, Peter Jackson and pre-Lord of the Rings, and Stuart Gordon.
I was going to say, just Peter Jackson, yeah. He loves Lord of the Rings. He wanted to get that in here.
For sure, he's done some gory films in the past, but Stuart Gordon.
Let it happen, Crawford.
You'll know From Beyond and Reanimator, there's like the one great, if you go into the video store, you know, I mean, me had gone there in the 80s and like where the guy's face is kind of looks like it's elasticized and it's being pulled off his face. It's like, it's a very classic 80s film cover. It's, you know, so these films are sort of, they bring in different kind of sci-fi elements, some of them, but they're really gory. There's a lot of, like, it just looks like a lot of sausage being used, you know what I mean, in the films, right?
A lot of practical effects, right?
For sure. It's indicative of a lot of 80s films. So he was definitely, there was definitely an homage and from those older films that I guess he was a lover of to pull into this new one. You know, this movie definitely has got a little bit of everything. If you like the gore and you like sort of like almost that comedy 80s gore, you know, gruesome visual, it's got that. But it also has some theme-based work as well. And if you want to kind of pick out ideas in the popular discourse, that's there for you too. So he definitely has made a intentional point of having both those things in there. And I think this actually this movie does a good job of offering that to the viewer so that if you want a little more, you can get a little more, no pun intended. Or if you just want... or if you just want to take it for what it is, you can do that. But one last point, in terms of an exploitation film, he was very upfront about being honest that this movie was made to capitalize on the COVID pandemic. You know, he said that he went online and he looked at streaming platforms and the most popular movies were Contagion, Outbreak. So he decided in consultation with his financier to make a movie about a virus that infects people and turns them into something. In this movie, in his iteration, it turns them into homicidal sex perverts, torturous, brutal, any other synonym you can think of for friggin' murder.
Depraved.
Depraved, yeah. This movie has a few parts in it which can be difficult to watch, and I think even for the avid horror goer, there's a lot of horror fans like this movie, and I liked it. There's definitely parts in this movie that you need to be ready for. Rob, is this movie a new take on the zombie genre?
It's a good question. Are we looking at a new monster here, or are we looking at zombies? Like, or is this a new kind of spin on zombies? I think the connection to zombies is that it's like a swarm, like they get infected and they multiply, right? And they keep coming and they're relentless. How they're different though is they have intentionality and they have like a purpose for what they're doing and they enjoy what they're doing. Zombies are generally sort of, you know, craving to eat you.
More animalistic.
Yeah, they're driven by their hunger or something very base, right?
Whereas, instinct.
Yeah, instinct. Where these creatures or these people are infected and it doesn't change. They're still humans, I guess you could say, right? They have human wants and desires, but they're just, the explanation is that they are unable to repress their aggressive and sexual behavior. And there is even at one point a discussion that perhaps they understand and know that what they're doing is horrible, but they're unable to, they just can't stop themselves. They're just compelled to continue doing what they're doing. And they are brutal and they rip you apart. And they like, this is the thing about the movie. They fuck people like all the time. It happens throughout the movie constantly, right?
Like 9 minutes into the pod and we're already talking about fucking people.
But it's like, that's the line in the sand that this movie forces you to cross. Like, it's not just like, hey, they're gonna rip your guts out and you're gonna see like all the hot dogs come out of the stomach. It's also like, and they're gonna take their pants off and fuck that body too. Like, you know what I mean? It's really like, it puts you in that sense of like, oh god, this is awful. Like, it really is unnerving.
But this is a disease that it's referred to a couple times in the film as the Alvin virus, and it affects the limbic.
makes their voices go higher.
Yeah, so it affects the limbic system, which is connected to emotion. It's connected to, actually to memory as well, and connected to aggression. And I guess what this virus does is that it makes you hyper aggressive, but also taps into your sexual drive, and somehow it intermingles where that aggression and that want with your sexual drive manifests itself into these, again, if we're going to call them zombies or if we're going to call them like, if they're, who knows what they are, right? And into these, like as you just said, these sadistic, very, very sadistic, perverted killers. And it's interesting how it's not necessarily consistent throughout the whole film, and the way that the director presents itself to the content to us, it starts with like very, very kind of gory. I think about the restaurant scene, right, where you have like that fucking like looks like Gandalf and is in the restaurant and then grabs like the friggin' fry juice and or the hot oil and then puts it on the guy that was just trying to make like a double pork egg sandwich for the dude in line and then rips off the face. That very much reminded me of those 80s films, right?
Yeah.
Where you actually, so I'm okay with that, right? But you didn't get a sense of the sexual, sadistic, sadist part.
And I think the other thing, like you said, the sexual element keeps amping up a little bit more. And there's even a spot where like a guy is being tortured and you think he's a human who's being tortured. Well, like, sorry, a uninfected person being tortured. And it turns out he is infected.
Yeah.
And in fact, he's angry that the guy has interrupted the torture that these kids were inflicting on him because he was getting sexually gratified by it. And he was like, why'd you stop? I was just about to blow my load. I forget what the fuck he says, but it's something gross like that. And you're like, oh shit, these guys actually enjoy this. And they feel like they need to have this. So it takes it to a new level. And when your mind goes to where these monsters go to, it's really disturbing. Let me finish a fucking line. Would you quit jumping in? It's the fourth fucking time in one sentence. I'm done.
That's an interesting part where that guy's being tortured on the basketball court, because you're right. He is infected. He does talk about that he needs to blow his load for it. He gets, like you said, he gets angry. But later on, there's a contradiction there, because the virologist talks about how people that are infected, he says that's why they don't attack each other, because they feel the need to have their victims suffer. But that didn't happen in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
You see how the...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I picked that up too. I feel like the movie can't decide, or they want to leave it ambiguous. Because when the virologist says that, he's actually speculating. He's not totally sure. He's saying it like, because he even doubts himself at the end of that phrase. I think he sort of says, or do they? Or he has like a quizzical look on his face by the end of that statement. But it's interesting to know. Yeah, to think about like what are they. You know, what are the rules of these zombies or these creatures is kind of what we're driving to here, right? And it's hard to tell. I can't even totally tell how infection takes place. It seems like it's happening generally the way that it does in most zombie films, where it's like blood or bite. But even that, I'm not totally sure I'm like totally sure about, because I know people get splattered with blood and then don't get infected at certain points.
When you talk about blood and bite, I think that it's blood, because Jim, he gets his fingers chopped off by the guy that's growing the Thai basil beside him.
Yeah.
And he's not bit.
No, yes, you're right. He got shot.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a slow change, which is interesting, because I think, although, you know, sometimes when zombies reanimate, depending on the film, that there's a different sort of time lag in terms of when that happens. So, you know, I think for that, I think it's probably more blood. But the rules, sorry. To me, it feels like zombies, they die, they reanimate, and then they come back with a blank slate, and it's just bloodlust. And mm-hmm. they look for whoever is not a zombie to turn them. This is far more calculated. I think it's probably like some kind of rabies disease. I actually think this is probably more of a disease movie than it is a zombie movie. Rob, I'm going to put you on the spot right now. If you were to draw your line in the sand, is this like a disease film or is this a zombie film? Where would you shelve it in the video store?
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. You identified it there. It is a disease film, because there is a bit of a backdrop in this film where they are showing that the government has delayed their response to this flu, to this virus. And this is where you're talking about how they wanted to make a film that was about the time of the day being COVID and all that. Like this show, like there's this thing about how the politicians haven't quite answered the call here. And because it's an election year and et cetera, they haven't, you know, done enough to contain this virus, even though they were warned. And now this is the outcome. But, you know, Jimmy, we've also seen zombie films that are disease films, like this virologist at the end of this film that we encounter. He's kind of like the worst version possible of Will Smith in I Am Legend, right? He's like sitting cooped up in his shack, trying to come up with a serum or an antidote. Although he's only had like, what, 12 hours to work. He's just been
there
all day. I was
going to say, it seemed like he'd been in there for like, you know, 6 months. The guy's been in there for like 8 minutes.
Yeah. I know. I thought that was weird too. Like they should have just
doing
had like
tests. I've got the acid shower for you. Like, I don't know, man. I got the babies.
This guy is so mentally gone. He is so fucked up. And you're like, but this must have happened long before this virus kicked in, because this guy is fucking crazy.
Sorry. Like, I don't want to jump ahead, but I think probably, and I'm thinking about the virologist, when the guy chops off his foot and then the other one pukes into his open wound,
yeah.
That is like got to be one of the moments I'm like, fucking Jesus Christ, man. Why did I decide to start a podcast?
That puke scene, like, and is there two puke scenes in this movie? And they remind me of another film. I'm trying to remember where I've seen puke films like that.
Yeah.
It looks like The Fly. Do you remember The Fly?
Yes, yes.
When Jeff Goldblum would puke on people.
Right? Yeah, it's like fucking so disgusting. And the fact that he's doing it into the open wound is like just, you're like, you know that that puke actually probably feels good against the open wound. But but in your mind, you're thinking that it's just like, oh my God.
Well, Eddie's infecting him. Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Anyways, I think this is a good time to transition into sort of the idea of this film and its connection to popular discourse. Was there anything that that you saw that linked itself to any sort of popular discourse of our time?
Well, yeah, we talked about this. There's definitely a link to COVID and what's happening in our world today.
Yeah.
The idea that the politicians haven't responded quick enough, that, you know, this has gotten out of hand, and, you know, there was evidence to suggest they could have done more. But the other thing that really weighs on me in this movie, and this is part of what makes the movie good, but also what makes me so uncomfortable watching it, is how it references the culture we're in of mass killings. And the scene on the train, on the subway, is the key one where a guy starts stabbing people. Now, in North America, especially in the United States, this has been gun violence. And it's happening so frequently now that it's, like, absurd. But, like, literally, I think, what, 2 days ago, Jamie, there was another one, right? So, like, it just keeps happening. Like, this is the point that I'm all – the fact that I can't even remember where it happened. No, I'm sorry. It was in Illinois. But, like, the fact that there's so many –
Highland Park, that parade shooting, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many now that you just – oh, yeah, there was that one here and that one there. Like, it's like you're talking about baseball scores or something. Like, it happens so often. In Asia, I know there's been less gun violence, but knife violence has happened. So I think this is more of a direct reference to what has happened there. And that scene where this guy who's infected starts stabbing people, this is where the aesthetics of mass killing event really started making me feel uncomfortable, because I'm very fearful about this kind of thing. It really scares me. And I mean, that's why it is an act of terrorism. It scares people to think that at any given moment, someone could just decide to arbitrarily take your life because they're just in some sort of revenge fantasy that they have against the world. And this guy, when he's being pulled down, finally, by the way, it takes them forever to finally pull this guy down. He says, did I break the record? Did I break the record? So that tells you, like, even if he's infected, some of these people are, like, already not great people. And they, especially the men throughout the film, we meet at least two or three men along the way in this film who are not necessarily the greatest people before they get infected. And then we learn that, yeah, like then all that shit within them sort of comes out when they become infected. And I think the best example, Jamie, I'll set you up here for is the businessman.
Ah, the businessman. You know, I actually thought his performance in the film and the character that he's trying to portray was exceptional. I just want to piggyback on one thing that you mentioned. And I think you're absolutely right when you talk about the idea of that mass killing, the fact that it's calling into question your safety if you're on the subway, if you're anywhere in public, right? Anything can happen at the wrong time. And that's where I think this movie is different rather than other zombie films, is that there's so much evil on the part of the infected, is that it really hits closer to home, especially in light of just what you have in the popular discourse right now with all those mass shootings. But one other thing I take away from this businessman, and I think about when we did our Train to Busan, and when we talked to Jaelim Lee about the patriarchal society in Asian countries, and we talk about the connection between sort of, or the gender, the relationship between genders, male and female. And this businessman is trying to chat up Kat on the subway. Mm-hmm. And she's, you know, she's uncomfortable from the start, but she is like very, very polite. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say polite.
At first, yes.
And then he kind of continues and continues and continues. And then eventually just, she says, like, I'll fucking report you for sexual assault. And that's probably something that never would have been said before. And then he makes the comment just before he turns, is that this country's kind of going to shit. You know, men used to be able to compliment a woman and they used to be able to say what they wanted to say. And he's almost justifying the fact that he was annoying this fucking woman on the subway. And, you know what I mean? And I think that was probably something that was interesting and something that I don't think happened in Train to Busan, but happened in this film, maybe because it was from a Canadian filmmaker. But I feel like at least in that part, because we're critical of, and I don't want to take your point here because we were talking off pod, it was really good. I don't want to take your point about the way he wrote female characters, but at least in that point, he's empowered Kat in that instance, which maybe you wouldn't have seen in a film earlier on. So I think that is something worth noting.
Yeah, that's a tricky slope though. To me, is that empowerment or just equality? Like, she's basically just saying, fuck off. Like, she's not saying, like, give me the power that you shouldn't occupy. She's just saying, like, leave me alone. And so, what I'm saying is, like, yes, the script writing in that moment is very contemporaneous. This is a woman who is justified in her opinion of, like, look, I've already been politely told you to leave me alone, that our conversation is over. Now, please leave me alone. And, you're still not doing it. So now I'm going to escalate it to, like, me being a bit of an asshole to you, which is fuck off because you're being a dick.
Yeah, you're right. I don't want to operate from a deficit perspective here, but I'm just saying that I think from what we've learned And from the commentary from the woman that we interviewed is that maybe that was even considered like out of school. And I think that, that you're right. Is equality empowerment? No. Is it a step in the right direction, especially when something is culturally different from what we may be used to? Or I think that that's something worth note.
Yeah, I think you've opened the can of worms here, which I'm going to get into now then, is that in this film, like you said, this guy, he articulates his like dislike of how women are sort of now balancing out and how, you know, back in the day, I used to be able to say whatever I wanted. And then he turns, right? And when he turns, and like several of the men in this film, when they turn, they become violently misogynistic, right?
Yes.
They call women whores. They use really pejorative language and really like me language to describe women and what they're going to do to them, all these nasty things that they say. And they say it like really explicitly. Like it's really dark and really, really gross, some of it, right? Now, this is what I'm driving to here is that like when the women turn, they rarely – I don't think any of them say anything sexually violent at all. In fact, I think the only time we even hear any dialogue from an infected woman is the girl who now out of the wheelchair comes over to saw the one guy in half who's being held down by five others. And he's somebody that we don't like already. We've already found out that he's kind of a pervert. But he's not turned yet or he's not infected. And she comes over. And one of the quotes that she says – this is kind of revisits my like kind of school shooter thing is that like she says, I always had trouble making friends. I just need to meet the right people. And by right people, she means other, you know, sadistic perverts like all the infected people. So my point is like she inflicts violence, but sexual violence is not brought up by the women. It's brought up by the men. And it's almost like the writer didn't really know what women would do or become in that situation. He sort of didn't have I don't know, like I don't want to take your point, but you had mentioned that they act differently than the male infected.
Well, exactly. And I'm going to piggyback that on with just what you're talking about, the language. When the businessman is acting differently. He is infected. He is looking to maim, kill with as much horror as possible. He's looking to sexually gratify himself. And the language that piggybacks with that is, you know, after he... You know, after he fucks the girl's eyeball, you know, he
says... I sock it, Jamie. I sock it.
I sock it. He's walking and he's saying, you know, your eyeball juice is drying on my dick right now. Like really, yeah, exactly. Really, really graphic language. And you're right. You don't see that other than from the male characters. And to get to the point about how they move, right? Like, you know, when the women get infected, they swarm like the zombies that we know. But when the men do, and they still swarm and they still are spastic and they still are. But the characters that he's chosen to highlight in this film are the male characters for the most part.
But they don't have the intention. I think I just want to keep you on point here. Like the women don't attack with intention. They seem to attack more and just like crazed.
Yeah.
Like,
indiscriminate attacking. Right?
Attacking. And the other thing is like you see in this film that like the men will rape women. And the scene will begin as rape, right? But then the woman gets infected and she changes. And now the sex turns into like this orgiastic.
Yes, yes. Enjoyment. In the hospital scene, you see that, yes.
Yeah, they're all like fucking each other in this like crazy blood-soaked orgy. So it's a little bit speaks to me that like, is this the writer, the director, or is this just like, I mean, maybe because he's writing a horror film, he's trying to drive this home a little more. But it doesn't come across like a little bit of a teenage school shooter fantasy here, or just like maybe I'm always keep associating with school shooters, but I guess my point is like this like misogynistic fantasy of like all women turn into whores and crazy like fuck slaves and everyone's just killing each other and nobody matters anymore. There's no humanity. It's just like so, you know, pessimistic in that regard. So I guess my point, getting back to what you were saying, the women don't act like the men. There's sort of like this imbalance of like how he treated the two. And I don't know if that's like an issue where he just didn't know how to write women or if he just didn't know if he, like you said, I mean, he's choosing to focus on male characters and Kat is the only one that kind of gets any sort of arc.
If we're pulling themes of, you know, school shooter and mass violence and these kinds of themes that are in the popular discourse and he's embedding them into his film, are we to applaud him for doing that? That's one of the things I'm not sure how to take it.
Yeah, I think that's the tricky thing when you make a horror movie. You are trying to shock and scare. And that's the thing, this movie doesn't, like, we usually talk about scares, and it doesn't scare me, but it definitely disturbs me. And that's like a, usually a goal of a good horror. They want to kind of like leave you uneasy and on edge and have something to think back on and be like, ugh, that's awful. I don't want to think about that. And this movie definitely hits those notes. Like,
yes.
Now, is that, I mean, is that problematic? I don't know. Like, I think we go to these films for that. So when those feelings arrive out of sexual or gender imbalance in terms of like power dynamic shift, or where women are just basically, you know, reduced in some way, is that problematic filmmaking, or is that like just something that we as a culture have ingrained in us? And I think, like, when you think about guys like incels, like, that is how they think. And so this is kind of a movie where, what if the incels won? You know, what?
You know, I think it's. We also need to be aware of our own space, right? I would love to hear the perspective from a female in terms of how they view this movie, especially hitting some of the themes that we're talking about. So, you know what? Anybody that's into this pod, probably 30 minutes in, give us your perspective, right? Send us a quick little email. Let us know what you thought specifically about this movie, some of the themes we've been talking about. From the female perspective, I'd love to hear what Rob and I would love to hear what we had to say, because we're just two middle-aged white dudes commenting on this film. The movie, again, highlights a distrust in government, and that it's not something that the movie is completely about, but it definitely, in two occasions, you see this like sham of a press conference of the leader where people are like, well, before guy gets his fucking head blown off, people are laughing at it, just being like, oh my god, what is this? I think the one guy says, I don't need a history lesson, I need some action. And then right at the beginning, there's the podcast host that's trying to ring the alarm, and nobody's listening, everybody just kind of just brushes it off. And then there's the virologist that talks about how he's talked about the, or tried to warn the government, but nobody wants to act. So there's that idea of things kind of being politicized, right? And you take anything from that?
Yeah, we've talked about this with COVID, you know, distrust of political leaders, distrust of scientists. We're definitely seeing this in the United States where I'm sorry, we always scapegoat them because, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of people in America who are pointing back and saying, like, who don't agree with these things, but after what we've seen with Roe versus Wade being overturned and all these other like distrust of science examples that are happening at the government level, it's really kind of scary. But at the same time, this movie is kind of only grazing that stuff and using it as a topic of the day. I don't think they're getting too deep into it. So, Jimmy, there's like this growing trend. It's in pop culture. Zombies are like kind of the totem of that. But this idea of like a swarm that's overtaking society, where like you're escaping, there's less and less of you left, you know, you're trying to survive, you're being consumed by this mob, and we're seeing it everywhere. And it really feels like this movie taps into that fear. And again, it goes back to what I feel about school shooters. Like, there's this real pessimism that the whole world's gone to shit, so what does it matter if I go into a school and blast a bunch of people? This hatred of everyone that doesn't agree with me, this like hatred of people who are not of my kind, because we know that a lot of these shootings, these mass shootings, are often racially motivated. But this movie is tapping into that in a really interesting way. Well, interesting way, or just a way that like hits me because I'm so aware of it. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. It, like, especially with just the amount of violence and the type of violence that we see occurring in the film, it just makes me think about almost like the, you know, if I draw a metaphor with the zombies to like just like the radicalization of groups of people and them feeling like they're infringed upon by people that are like xenophobia, infringed upon by people that are different from themselves, right? I think of a piece of paper, right? And if you were to light both sides of it, that paper burns on each side, and then you still have that spot in the middle, right? Eventually that spot gets smaller. And then what do? Well, you radicalize, you lash out. And that's what we're seeing in this, at least that's the way that the storytelling takes place with these type of zombies in this film. But to me, I see a direct correlation between the types of things that we see in modern day society. And it's not just in the States. You're seeing it everywhere. It makes you think of like almost a wholesale distrust of humanity, of society, right? Mm-hmm. And not to say that this is the breakdown of society, but there is a increasing distrust of just institutions, of organizations, yeah. of people that are different from yourselves. And we're seeing that with, again, all these random acts of violence. And to me, I find it hard to watch the film and then not think about that and not see how that is just portrayed in the movie. Now, I'm not putting all that on the director right there, right? That is my own
opinion.
No,
that's the ground he's working off of.
Yeah, I think so, or we think so. Rob, this movie just overall just ushers in an extreme feeling of helplessness.
Let's transition there, Jamie, because that's a great way to talk about the themes of this film. And let's recall what the title of this film is. It's called The Sadness.
Are we inherently evil? Mm. This movie is about, are we? Are we inherently evil?
I am.
As people.
I am.
You know, evil is a human phenomenon, humanity. We see Jim and Kat and the tender touches that they have at the beginning of the film.
Ooh, touches.
Tender touches, you know what I mean? A little alliteration. And then we
Did
see...
Did you write that down?
No.
This is good. This is really good. That's all.
And then we see sort of just the continuum of the storytelling and how one... You know, they're both fighting for survival. It's a story of a reunification, right? Drops them off at work. They got to get back together. But then you see all this, like, evilness around and what this virus is doing to people. But then you see Jim at the end, and he sort of is a reflection or amplifies what the virologist said, that largely these people are doing these sadistic, horrible things, but are largely aware of them. And even that they know that they're vile and repugnant, they can't do anything about it.
So at the very end of the film, and Jamie, correct me if I'm wrong, how does Jim turn? Do we ever see how he turns?
Well, that's the thing, right?
And so we just know that he just does, right?
He turns over the course of the movie. You know, he starts having hallucinations of like that mannequin head in the in the water, and like with the black tongue. So he's having sexual fantasies as he transforms, which is interesting because again, it connects attacks the limbic system, and then eventually they turn into these. So that's actually interesting, that one part, because it gives us like that midway point between transformation.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways,
so his eyes go black. That's the sign, and then also their eyes always look red and puffy on the outside.
Yeah,
the sign that someone's infected. And from up until the last scene of the film, we've seen Jim surviving all this time and staying alive and trying to get to Kat. And it's not till the very end that now we realize, oh, shit, Jim didn't make it. He's been turned. But like the virologist said, he's still Jim. It's just that he now has this craving and this like repulsive, compelling feeling to do horrible things. But he clearly still loves Kat, and he's talking to her how he still loves her. But that love is mixed now with his sexual desire to also destroy her. And I don't know if you caught this, Jamie, but I found this really like interesting connection back to American film. I don't know if you remember the movie Punch Drunk Love.
I'm looking at your face and I just want to smash it. I just want to fucking smash it with a sledgehammer and squeeze it. You're so pretty.
Chew your face, and I want to scoop out your eyes, and I want to eat them, chew them, and suck them.
And yes, I did. Yeah.
Adam Sandler is, you know, he's kissing his girlfriend. He's on top. I think he's lying on top of her. Like they're having this quiet moment together, and Adam Sandler says something that is kind of shocking, but he's saying it in such a way that like anyone who loves someone kind of understands. Like there's this. It's kind of like with your kids. You want to hug them and squeeze them a little bit when you hug them. It's almost like you want to hurt him a little bit. And, yeah. And Sandler says this. It's so funny in the movie, but in this context, now it's frightening in the sadness.
Yeah, well, now you...
But there's a truth to it. He's still saying, like, I still love you. Like, he almost compels her to open the door and let him in. She's got him held back with a gate here, and he can't get through. But
okay,
Anyway, I hope you understand what I'm trying to say here.
I know exactly.
It's this mixture where the truth of his love is still there.
And Jim says something similar. I think he says he wants to cut off her tits.
But he says, peel your skin slowly. A bunch of gross stuff. But he says it also in the sense that he loves her.
Yeah, like endearing. So here's my take. My take is that humans are inherently good. And in this movie, violence is... the virus is the catalyst for violence. And if I were to bring it into sort of modern day society, I think that the media is a catalyst for violence. I think the radicalization of the people is not intrinsic. I think it's all external force. So I think humans are actually inherently good. I think it's the processes and the forces around them that turn them. Well, you can disagree. I just think that I don't think that people, I think there are some people who are inherently evil, okay? But I think the overwhelming majority of human beings are good people and are in a collectivist idea. But unfortunately, not all of us have the same support structures in place. Not all of us have all these things, right? So we fall victim and we're more susceptible to negative forces, which can shape what we turn into, which for a lot of people can be extreme evil.
I just think media is made by people, right? It's not made by some third party alien species or something that's like sending hate messages into our brain. Like, it's made by people.
You're not going to go and tell me the media is good.
No, but I'm not going to say – but what I'm going to say is you can't say like media is a product of humanity. Like, it's not the other way around.
Yeah, but that – but it's a product of humanity and it's constructed by humanity. But the motivation behind it is often not good. The motivation behind it is often –
yeah, but that's the human motivation. Like to say that media is made without – like it's not – media is biased, right? Like it's made by someone with an intention. So to think of it as like this flat on political thing is nonsense.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that is one force that can shape and turn susceptible people. Media preys on weak. Media preys on preys on the sheep. Media preys on the uneducated. That inherently, I think
you're talking about popular news media. Like, let's be distinct here, because we're making media right now. Like, do you call our Running Scared listeners sheep?
Well,
Jamie actually does off pod, by the way. I'll just let you guys know. Kidding.
I'm not saying all media is. I'm saying it's one of a multitude of external forces that contribute to the evilization of humanity.
All right, let's move on from here.
Yeah, okay.
We're not going to solve this. Last major points before we get to the review, Jamie. What else did you want? Is there another major theme you wanted to bring up here?
So interesting. How do you think this holds up as a survival film?
Yeah.
How's the journey?
I thought it was pretty cool. Like, I did think it held together that way. I wanted to ask you, do you think Kat actually does survive the end, or is she turning at the end? I feel like the lighting was tricky enough that I couldn't quite tell.
I think, well, she opens the door and then the wind blows in, which would assume that the helicopter is there and the government.
Is she going out there to get on the helicopter and escape, or get on the helicopter and kill everybody?
No, I'm not ready to go there. I think she was not infected, and I think she was infected with the serum and she didn't turn. She's immune.
Well, we don't know how long it takes. Like, we saw.
The guy said 5 minutes and then she lasted longer. I think that, you know, it'd be interesting to see a sequel with this film, because there's a lot
I can't take any more of this.
You know, this in one of the points that I make, and I always don't get me started on the fucking Walking Dead, okay? And like its whole, you know, regional and macro landscape, right? I've talked about that at length. This movie, actually, I like what Rob did with setting her up in the subway as you know, he could probably save some bucks there with some of the setting. He didn't probably have to film too many places. And then they put Jim out on the streets. So you had like a sense of what was happening in a closed setting. Mm-hmm. And you had a sense of what was happening in the kind of the greater city.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually effective and also did a good job of propelling the filmer forward.
I agree with you. Yeah. She moves from the subway to like another confined space.
Or the hospital. The hospital.
Yeah, in the hospital. So yes, Jim is like out there on the streets. We're seeing how things are being played out like in a wide open sort of anything could happen scenario. And then she's in more of these contained spaces where like something slips and all of a sudden they get in again or like, you know, there's like ways that you can kind of block them, but then they penetrate through again. And this is where the businessman, you know, returns. And what a great arch nemesis he becomes. Like he really is, like you said earlier, he's kind of the star of the film in a lot of ways. He's the,
for sure.
He's the boogeyman of the film.
I tried to do a little exercise when I was watching this film for the second time. I tried to put myself in the shoes of the character, especially when Jim was driving around. And I was like, if this was happening, this would shake you to your fucking core, man, in terms of your belief in and to draw it back to humanity. Like it would be horrific to live through this,
mm-hmm.
to see the sexual depravity, to see that this level of violence and to see this just level of fucking chaos. Like the president's head gets blown up with a grenade, which was actually one of the most, which is the funniest part of the movie.
It's a comedic part of the film, yeah.
It's a comedic part of the film, which is just like, this is okay. Now is this getting a little slapstick? And no, it brings it right back. Yeah, to just being like,
I thought that was interesting too. Just a one little moment of like, yeah. Let's make a bit of a joke about this scenario, and yeah. Then back to the horrible shit again. And like, we haven't even talked about the babies yet, Jamie.
Oh, was I saving that for the review? Like, the level of violence in this film is pretty high, I would say.
Pretty high, as in as high as it can kind of ever go. Like, what more could happen? Like, you name it,
I don't know.
In this movie.
I don't know. You're seeing people.
There's
get
a woman
raped.
Who has her eye stabbed with an umbrella, and later on, the guy fucks her in the eye socket. That's how fucking gross this movie gets. We see people get sawed apart,
well,
torn apart.
He actually said, and I'm trying to think of the one scene. He said that he actually dialed it back a little bit because, quote, he wanted to keep the audience on his side, unquote. So I don't know what the fuck he dialed back.
Well, I guess if you see some Japanese horror movies, they do go pretty wild. Like we've talked about The Audition, which I hope we never review, but you know what I think about that movie. But that movie has some moments that are so horrible. And I mean, like, that's just the tip of the iceberg. There's other like, Japanese horror
I haven't
movies
seen that.
That.
Is it graphically horrible?
Yeah, like you see a saw slowly cutting through somebody's legs. Like a piano wire style saw too. Like there's some really nasty visual watch it happen. Like you have to watch it happen. Like the camera doesn't cut away. What about the babies in the garbage bag, Jamie?
So the baby's in the garbage bag. So I'm trying to put myself into the position, and just for the listener, you get to a point near the end of the film where Kat is able to evade just a bunch of people trying to rape and kill her. And a virologist who's barricaded himself into the maternity ward behind a steel door is in his scrubs, pulls her in, locks, chains her up in a shower, puts this like acid disinfectant spray on her. Basically, he's trying to help her, but he wants to make sure she doesn't turn. And then he goes on this monologue, which really informs us as to what's happening in society, about how he tried to warn his bosses about the Alvin virus, about how he saw people change, about how he brought himself into the maternity ward and there was babies and he locked himself in there. And then he talks about how he infected them and eventually killed them because if he hadn't have done it, these were babies. These people, these infected people would have come in and fucked the babies and is cannibalistic too.
Doesn't
right?
really make this sense because he's already locked himself in. So why do you have to kill the babies? If he's got the door locked and they can't get in,
I think,
why
he,
is he...
I think I think killing in the sense that he infected them with the virus. And then once they turned into, they weren't immune, they turned into, because he's trying to find an antidote. He's scared, right?
Yeah, but he's trying to do it in 4 hours or whatever. Like, this is the part of the movie that, like, everything kind of falls apart for me in terms of the logic. This guy is not logical. Like, he's totally lost. He is a monster to himself because he believes, or at least thinks, that he's going to try to solve this fucking zombie infection in the next 6 hours. And he's basically, any human he can get his hands on, he's jabbing them with this, what he hopes to be the antidote. But, like, it doesn't make sense. He only has a few babies at his disposal, which he decides to turn into, you know, guinea pigs.
Scapegoats.
And then he does it to Kat. And it's like, you think you're going to solve this medical problem in X amount of hours? Like,
well,
I don't know. Yeah. Has he just lost his mind because of the situation? But he seems to be himself also like a mad scientist level of nonsense. Like, he's like crazy. Like, this,
I don't know. You would think he's very precautious, and he's very aware of the situation. So you think that he would be like, my issue was when they actually end up to leave to go to the helicopter, this guy's not planned out. I would be like Bert from Tremors, man. I would fucking have like shields made and like, he's got cameras in there. He just walks out and he's doing like the old spy, you know, his back's against the wall. I'm like, he's in a zombie infested hospital with like, and then he gets his foot chopped off. Like, that's, you're right. That's where the logic is. Has he been in there for 3 months?
Yeah.
Or has he been in there for 3 hours? It made it seem like he'd been like arduously working on this antidote for weeks.
Yeah, but like, as far as we know, this whole infection broke out this morning or this afternoon or whatever. So he's only been there since 9 a.m.
Yeah, that's whatever, exactly. So he's like, oh, exactly. I've been working on an antidote.
He thinks he's like Will Smith, and he's only been at it for a couple hours. Anyway, I just thought this character kind of derailed the logic of the whole film a little bit in a way that was just silly. Like,
I like
the problematic, but just silly.
Yes, I like the introduction of the character, but it's like he talked too much, right? He went on too much. He was like, they wanted to bring in, it's like the library scene that I always talk about. It's the scene that the scene that informs, mm-hmm. the scene that
it's
gives.
It's an exposition dump.
It's an exposition dump, exactly. That's what it is, context dump. And this one was like, it's like, oh, in any kind of shockumentary, you need to have babies dying. And that he had to, you know what I mean? I think at one point he was probably thinking, all right, now what are all the ways that I can get the viewer as uncomfortable as possible? Yeah. You know, raping? Yep.
Check.
Sawing off people's dicks? Yep.
Check. Fucking eye sockets? Check.
Well, he could have shown, exactly. Imagine what if he would have been graphic enough to show that.
Yeah, he didn't show a dick, did he? He could have pulled out a dick.
That would have been, no, but he shot, you know, and showing people eating fingers, and especially when Jim gets his hand cut off, and there, you know, that's another thing. Cannibalism is a piece of this as well. So it's basically anything that you want, you've got in this one. You want to go ahead and review this, or is there anything else you want to kind of touch on?
No, let's review this thing, man.
All right. All right, I'm gonna go first. All right, so I watched this movie after watching the trailer a couple times. I wasn't sure what to expect, and I think to myself, I'm on like, you know, you're on like a roller coaster, and you're getting yourself strapped in, and you're enjoying it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little bumpy, and then you get to the point of the movie, like, you know, something's about to kick off. You get to the point of the movie where that crazy fucking person with the white hair throws the oil on the short order cook's face, and then he's ripping off his face. And then I said, okay, so it's going to be this kind of film, right? So I was ready for it. But as a human being, there's only so much torture and rape and misogynistic activity and just like total vile, repugnant, brutality that one can take, right? It is not my cup of tea with horror, okay? It is not my go-to torturing, like, you know, watching people torturing is not the type of horror movie that I particularly like. That being said, I do think that the movie, for the most part, is well acted. There's a lot of good performances. We didn't even talk about that. We didn't do a character section in here, but I thought the performances were really good. I thought the movie moves along really well. I think that the way the violence is depicted is just absolutely brutal. And if that's what he's going for, he was completely successful doing it. In terms of some of the things we just touched on, you know, the virologist, did it make total sense? Maybe not. But, as a movie and as an exploitation film, talking about something that we've all gone through as a society in the last 2 years, and then adding a twist on it, I think is really cool. The idea of, is it a zombie movie, disease movie, the breakdown of society, the dystopian nature of what could be, is all things of interest to me. And we've been talking about this for almost an hour and 20 minutes or whatever it is. To me, there's some meat on the bone there, no pun intended. I'm going to give The Sadness 3.5 footsteps out of 5. Really enjoy this film for what it is. Just a gory, bloody massacre mess.
Yeah, good review. I think The Sadness title is interesting. And one of the things that I keep thinking about as I take away this film, because the scene where the virologist explains that it's potential that like these infected people are totally aware of what they're doing and are deep down like actually feeling horrible about what they're doing. And when you look at their faces and the way that throughout the movie, all the infected people are smiling, right? And it's like, but they're smiling in that way where like when you're too high and you can't stop yourself from laughing, where like you can't break your smile and it's starting to become painful. That's the look on their face, right? Plus that like puffy eye thing with the black eyes. So there is something really haunting about that idea that they are like physically unable to prevent themselves from doing what they're doing. And that is terrifying to me. That is really unnerving. And then, of course, the whole idea of society falling apart, this sort of like mass killing, this swarm, all those things I find entertaining as well as unnerving. Do I have problems with the film? Of course, we've talked about some of them. But I do think I would recommend this film. I would always caveat with like, hey, if you're into like kind of 80s and 90s horror where like it's about scares and shock, like a couple scares, like this is not for you. Like this is pure gore fest, like blood soaked, disgusting depravity. Mm. So be ready for that. The sexual violence part, I think it's an interesting thing to put into a movie because it does make it even like harsher and horrible. But I do feel like there's this sort of weird edge to it where I'm not totally convinced that the director is not playing out, not necessarily his sexual fantasies, but like he's pursuing a very male point of view when it comes to the enactment of that. Because I don't think he really was able to find any like room or was able to write for a woman in that sense. Like what would a like sexually perverted, compulsive female rapist look like? He doesn't seem to know how to do that. And it's like, wow, that's what's missing from this movie, Jamie. There's no
pervasive.
But I guess it's just like trying to figure out like, you know, it takes a dark mind to find these things. And this guy's definitely made us feel that darkness and that sadness that the film alludes to is it's a good time for everyone involved. Four steps from me. I give it four steps. Yeah, I'm going to give
Four steps from Robert Lindrum. Rob, yeah. That's a good review.
With and the caveat that you got to know what you're getting into.
For sure.
And you by the way, you put me into this cold. So I did not know that this was a gore fest, rape fest that it turned out to be. So
well, you're trying to fucking figure out your life, man. I'm the one that's, you know what I mean? No, like, I'm scouring.
Watch trailers. I have this thing. If I don't know things about a movie, I don't like to watch the trailer. It's like, okay, if I've already signed up to watch it, I kind of enjoy the like idea of like, let's just see what I get. I sometimes watch trailers after I watch movies just to see like, well, how did they promote this thing?
So I did that with this movie. And I don't know. The movie had just colored my brain so much. It didn't really have an effect. But your review made me think of one thing, Rob. It made me think of, you know, that smile you get when you're high. Rob, you got me high for the first time. Hash. Anyways, thank you for listening to the Running Scared podcast. This has been Rob Lendrum and Jamie coming at you, delivering a review of The Sadness. So we'll see you next time on Running Scared.
The Running Scared podcast is written and produced by Robert Lendrum and Jamie Roberts. This episode edited by Jamie Roberts, with original music by Jamie Roberts. Find us on social media and tune in next time for another edition of Running Scared.